Yeah.
And all this is nonverbal. You just see it. He's so great at this. He just communicates it on his face. He's just like, she told me to touch it.
Yeah. And he does touch it. I mean, like.
Yay! But, you know, so the therapist asks about the dates, and it cuts to walking through a sitting room, the mom and this date.
Mm-hmm.
We should mention that the mom, when explaining the dating service, was like, and they screen out the ugly and fat people, so you know they've got high quality. And yeah. Cut to this slightly chonky, and I got no shade to throw on it, woman walking with the mom to a tea set.
You notice something on her cummerbund.
She has a cummerbund, a homemade cummerbund, that has an ice cream sundae on it. And if it's not an ice cream sundae, I would like to know what it is, because it's like a little silver dish with these little domes on it, and it only looks like ice cream. Mm-hmm. And then she explains that she's a poli sci major with a sub
minor in home ec.
Could you imagine being sat next to that in a party?
Harold's mom asked, poli sci?
Political science. Don't you just like knowing what's going on in the world?
And Harold like comes by.
And she's like, oh, here's Harold now. And he's in a white robe outside. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, hi. And in his other hand, he has a can of gasoline, but you only kind of vaguely see. Yeah. And she's like, oh. And mom's like, oh, she'll be in a minute.
Yeah. And he looks at this girl, and he waves and smiles to her politely, super polite. Mm-hmm. And then you see him walk off the screen.
Yes. And then you see him walk back around a hedge. Now, this is all through the window, because they're having this really annoying conversation about like
dull
political science, and then if that doesn't work out, then I can fall back on my home economics degree.
And they even start talking about, like, you know, Harold's a bit of a character. And
my brother's a bit of a character. And we had a TV without any guts, and he just put his head in there and was like, I'm on the news. And I'm like, ugh.
As this conversation is progressing, you see Harold, like, taking the gas can, and, like, he covers himself with this sheet, and then he covers himself with the gasoline.
You just see him shaking it out. And he's doing that right when mom says, not mom, Miss Chasen.
Yeah.
Chasen. When Mrs. Chasen's like, oh, he has a character, and you see him like shaking gas like vigorously on himself.
And then the girl talks about her brother and the TV set, and then Harold lights himself on fire.
It's so perfectly timed that she goes, she stands up and she's like, ah, Harold! And the mom goes, oh yes. And they both stand up, right? So she stands up freaking out. She stands up and she's like, oh, yes, it is Harold. And from behind the girl, whose name I don't remember, Candy. Name is Candy. Yeah. She's like, oh, God, ice cream on her cummerbund. Oh, Candy. Okay. So he walks in from off screen behind her, and she's like, oh, yes, here's Harold right now.
And she's not paying attention to this at all.
Looking at the flaming wreckage outside. I do not know how he did it without like a trap door on the little stand he's sitting on. Mm-hmm. This must be it. But okay. So she's like, what? And then, like, zips through, like, hits the wall, doesn't know where she's going, like, falls over halfway before she makes it out the door. And the mom is like, I have no idea what's going on, because she doesn't know there's a fire outside. And Harold, like, turns to look in the direction she went, which tilts his head towards the camera, which then he looks at the camera and he smirks, and it is so delicious.
Have you seen that meme of the smirking girl in front of the burning house?
Yes! Yes! Yes!
Yeah, that's Harold in this moment.
Yes, but it's also Jim Halpert from The Office every time he pulls a prank and he smiles directly to camera. It is a fourth wall break that Bud came up with on his own. It's not in the script. He's not supposed to look at the camera. He's just like, womp, womp.
That's so good.
So then he turns back to look at his mom a little bit, and he's just like, oh, I don't know what's going on. And then
we have Harold walking towards this building.
Yeah, it looks like an industrial building. He's walking across the parking lot.
He opens the door, and he sees a guy working on an ice sculpture.
So out of place. It's a huge ice sculpture, by the way.
Yeah, this is Glaucus.
Yeah, Glaucus. Or
Gloucester.
Here's the thing. This is the only time you see him. His name comes up again once or twice. Mm-hmm. That's all that matters.
Yeah. He's like, hey, what are you doing here?
I'm here to see Maud. And she, oh, Harold! And she sticks her head out from behind this block of ice is the size of like two refrigerators stacked on it and like four refrigerators wide. And I don't know why I'm referring to it in sizes of refrigerators, but you've got a pretty good idea, which means you're as twisted as I am. She sticks her head around from behind it. She's like, oh, hi, Harold. Except she's like demurely, like she's not very demure. Her naked body is hidden behind this block of ice. And he's like, Maud? And she's like, oh, yes.
He's like, oh, I'm sorry. And he kind of looks away sheepishly.
She's like super pleased that she's shocked the crap out of him.
Yeah. And then they're back in Maud's house and Harold asks her if she does this often.
Oh, I just like to give Glaucus a remembrance of the female form.
Yeah.
And they start flirting hard.
Oh, yeah.
Everything he says in the scene, I mean, I know I say it too often, but like butter. I pick up on intonations like a lot. Like in terms of flirting, I'm a very auditory person. So like the fact that he's just like, oh, I didn't mind it at all.
She's like, do you disapprove?
And then he stops. And you see him really think about it.
Yeah. And that makes her interested.
She's like, oh, he's not just some kind of whatever he mm-hmm. could have been. And then he's just like, no, yeah. I don't. And she's like, I'm so glad to hear that.
And then she goes ahead and takes him through the artwork.
Oh, they tour through her art. Oh, I love it. I love it.
And like the first piece she shows is the one titled The Rape of Rome.
You see over here, I can't remember the names of the characters, but there's a swan raping a lady at the bottom.
Yeah, Lita and the Swan.
Lita and the Swan. And she goes, Lita and the Swan, self-portrait. I was like, yes. It doesn't have nipples, though. I noticed that. I was looking for the nipples. And he was like, oh, that's amazing. Yeah. And she's like, do you want to see another one? And he's like, yeah. She takes him over. She's like, this is my favorite. I'm an abstract art lady. I like all kinds of art. But I really like painting and viewing abstract art or surreal art as well. And so she takes him. She's like, this is an elephant under the rainbow with an egg. And that's not the full description, but that's what I can remember right this second. And she's like, do you like it? And he's like, well, yes. And she's like, it's my favorite. And I'm like, I don't. I mean, like, I like art. I don't get it. I don't get it at all.
And then she takes him to like this orificator.
Odorific.
Odorific.
That's my odorific. It sounds a little bit like honorific, but because it's all about stanks, mm-hmm. odorific.
Yeah, it's pretty much this like...
It's a Willy Wonka looking thing.
Yeah, it makes the sounds of like something from Willy Wonka. It's pretty great.
It's about the size of a bread box. If you know what a bread box is, that's 1/16 of a refrigerator.
Go back to our last podcast, The Brave Little Toaster, if you want a more accurate description of what a bread box is. Just a
more accurate description of the fact that nobody knows what a bread box is anymore.
Except for your mom.
Your mom. Okay, yeah. Whatever, my mom. Yeah. So, okay, here's the thing. For it being a little ridiculous machine, this is one of my favorite bits.
Yeah.
She's like, let me pump it up for you. She's like, I got a smell that you will... She goes, I went through all these ones that, like, I got all these smells, like grass and a Mexican...
farmyard.
A Mexican farmyard. No thanks. Just any farmyard.
Yeah.
She picked like coffee or I'm picking random words, but like she lists all these smells and she's like, oh, I've got one you're going to love. Let me pump it up for you. She pulls out. She's like, snow on 42nd Street. Right. And she hands him the gas mask. Oh no, a gas mask.
Where have we seen a gas mask before?
I mean, like... Oh my God. If you would like to catch that reference, that's in our Little Shop of Horrors episode. That's 2 episodes ago. Okay. Thanks. All right. So she hands him the mask, turns it on, puts the canister in, and she's like, what do you smell? Oh, I love it.
And he just lists all these different things like the subway.
He does a big Darth Vader sniff. He goes, and the machine is going to, and she goes, what do you smell? And he goes, do you remember all the things?
Yeah. It's a subway mm-hmm. perfume. Cigarettes, because he coughs.
He smiles after he goes, perfume. And I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah, there's like a car.
Yeah. And then the one where he spills the cigarettes, he goes, a cigarette. And she's like, I know, it's funny. I'm just hilarious. I just stare at her.
Yeah, but like it ends with snowfall.
And she's like, I know. And he's like, this is amazing. He doesn't do anything. You can see that he's mm-hmm. genuinely pleased and that she is like so excited to have shared this thing with him. And that's mm-hmm. what has been happening since they met each other.
Yeah.
She's just so excited to share the thing. And he's so excited to learn there's so much more than he ever knew. Mm-hmm. Lydia, if I was not dead to the world already, this is where I would join in because mm-hmm. I was like, that's it. I'm locked in.
Yeah.
All of my snaps have been put into place. Mm-hmm. I have to see this all the way through.
Yeah.
I'm into this.
Yeah. And then she directs him to this wooden O.
I've entitled this scene or this part of this scene Feel up that statue. Pew, 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 pew. She's like, and then I moved on to the tactile.
Yeah.
And so she walks away from the odorific and she brings him over to this very large sculpture. And it's very plain visually, which is kind of the freaking point. It's got two pillars on either side that have irregular shapes. And in the center, I'm sorry, do you care if I describe
it? No, go for it.
So the center is this large oval that is, and they're very thick beams. They're probably, I know how you love me listing dimensions. It's like the size of each portion of it are 7 to 8 maybe inches wide. So the pillars mm-hmm. are about that, maybe even a foot wide. And then the center portion, and it, parts of it are rough looking, parts of it are smooth. And she's like, she goes, do you like it? And he goes, oh, well, yes, I do. And she goes, no, you have to feel it, touch it, caress it, palm it.
Explore.
And her hands are on it. And she's like telling him to do this thing. And he's just like, I guess. And then thank the Lord, the tea kettle goes off. She's making that straw, oat straw tea that she yeah. promised him. And she's heating mm-hmm. up the ginger pie that she's yeah. offered him. And she's like, feel, go, touch it. She so happily walks away. And he's just like, he's kind of got his hands on the two pillars. And he's just like, she told me to.
Yeah.
And all of this is nonverbal. You just see it. He's so great at this. He just communicates it on his face. He's just like, she told me to touch it.
Yeah. And he does touch it. I mean, like.
Okay, sorry, that's not the end of the podcast. It's just me loving this so much because it's like, oh my God. Like, because yeah. I was, because here's the thing, the odorific, I was like, oh, that's so romantic and they're bonding, right? Mm. And so once I get to that point, I'm like, so when's anything else going to happen?
Oh, and it definitely does.
Like, this next part, he's just like, I guess I'm feeling this wood. And she yeah. did tell me to grope it. And so he starts, the big oval part in the center.
Yeah. I mean, he brushes his hand.
He runs his I'm sorry. Hypered into this one. He runs his hand down the side of the inside of the oval shape in the middle, and then he gets to the back, which because it's so deep, it slopes down. So now
okay. I have a fan if you'd like
No, it's fine. It's fine. It's not like whatever. Okay. So anyways, it's just that visually it's not complicated if you've been there.
Like, okay, do you want me? He runs his hand.
I don't think I'm understanding at all. I think you really need to explain this and explain this a little bit more.
No. Okay, so he runs his hand down the inside of the oval, right? Mm-hmm. Which then slopes to the back. And it's all this very smooth, polished wood with very little bits of different colored wood. But it's all very mahogany, dark blue. And he runs his hand down towards the back. And then here's the thing. It's deeply intimate. Where you don't normally touch art. And he's certainly been this fixture in a world that's untouchable for so long that this is such a mm-hmm. very physically engaging act that you see him kind of like lose it a bit. He slopes his hand down and then he pulls his hand back out, right? And then he checks to see what she's doing. And she's just not tottering. She's just very animated and you can see her pouring a teapot and she's obviously getting a bit, get the pie
she's busy.
Ready.
She's busy.
Explain to me the next thing that happens because I've watched it twice recently now and I don't know what he does. But
he buries his face into the wooden vaheen. And he moans. I figured that was very obvious.
I didn't know. He puts his hand at the bottom of the base of the oval and he kind of buries his head into that.
Yeah.
And I couldn't tell if he was like sniffing it or just feeling it with his face, but he does grunt or something.
Mm-hmm. He moans. That's what the subtitles on Amazon Prime said.
Oh, snap.
It was moaning.
This was an all of the above experience then. It's all of it.
I guess so. I guess, okay. He had a full sensory experience with that, is what you're saying.
Yeah, well, I mean, tactile.
So then they're having tea. she's like, she makes a noise and he's like, like instantly out of his reverie.
Yeah.
I love that scene.
Yeah.
That's like probably the sexiest thing, I think.
Yeah.
Like, there's like one definitely. Other sexy, super sexy thing for me, but like other than that,
yeah.
Freaking tactile statue. I guess I'm going to get into woodworking.
Yeah. So Maud, as they're eating ginger pie and drinking this oat straw tea, asks Harold, what does he do out for fun outside of just funerals? And then you see...
Oh, no, wait. There are a couple things that happen in this conversation that I need to bring
okay,
up.
Okay.
He's like, she brings up again about Friday and that it's going to be her 80th birthday. And he's like, well, you don't look that old. And she's like, oh, breath of fire. And then she does this thing that happens in that Awkwafina film with the Korean Ajima. Who's like, you get up and you do these kind of like Eastern breath experiments. So she goes, every morning you get up and you do the breath of fire. And then she stands up and she pulls her arms back as so that you guys can't see, but imagine it. And then she goes,
We are in an apartment, and I know my neighbors above me are being just as loud as you. We've probably been very loud.
She makes those breath noises. I'm sorry. And then she kind of loses her breath out halfway through, like, the second set of them that she does. And she sits down. And she goes, proof my body's giving out anyway. But after Saturday, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And that's the first hard hint. We get like a three-quarters hint, but that's the first real hard hint we get about what's coming.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then she asks, what do you do other than funerals for fun?
And that's when they go to a place that's demolishing a building.
Yep.
And that's like the next thing that you see them do.
You might say that scene came in like a wrecking ball. But my notes say they would never let you have a picnic there.
Yeah, that's some like privileged white person shit.
They're eating carrot sticks with like a bottle of wine on a literal checkered picnic blanket.
In the middle of a demolished site.
Jen had something to mention about that scene that draws us back.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, just that, this is how we link up with Brave Little Toaster. If we're going to link from episode to episode still, then
we should start that. Some master listener should link all of our episodes. But there is a giant magnet that pulls up all that metal and dumps it to the next one. And things I do not remember. There's no way I'd remember Brave Little Toaster had a giant magnet. And this one had a giant magnet, too.
Yeah, I know.
An industrial mover magnet or whatever. I should know what that's called. But
was it a magnet? I thought it was just a claw.
It was a wrecking ball in the first part of the scene. Uh-huh. And then it is a magnet moving scrap metal from the construction site from one side to the other.
All right.
And it looks exactly like the one from Brave Little Toaster. It's a giant rusted brown dumbbell looking thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. Because as soon as Jen pointed it out, I was like, oh, my God.
Just draw little eyes on it.
I'll tell you something else. There's no antagonist in this film either.
No direct antagonist.
No direct antagonist. Okay, so she's like, you know there's another way. So she goes, I prefer something else.
Mm-hmm.
And then it cuts to
a greenhouse.
And she's like, I love to watch things grow. Now, here's the thing. That's a great continuation of the conversations they just had. Mm-hmm. But they had to leave that place, get in the car, drive to a place, walk into the thing, get to the plants. And then she's like, I love watching things grow. Like, there's these long...
They do that a few times coming up. But it's kind of like self-contained in this one moment. Mm. Like, when they go from the demolition to the greenhouse, from the greenhouse to the flower fields, they do that very sequentially for us as the audience, and it's contained. It's not, like, throughout the entire movie. So if this was, like, the worst part of the movie for you, again, I can kind of understand where you're coming from.
Oh, it's not but the worst part.
Not like, you directly, more as, like, the metaphysical audience that is listening to us right now.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, sorry, guys.
But... But if, like, for anybody who was watching this, if that was just, like, took them completely out, again, I can totally understand.
Because it seems like non sequitur.
Yeah.
I think within the film, it's fine.
It's fine, yeah.
Because you don't really, there's another way. I like to watch things grow.
Yeah.
So they go from they're walking through the greenhouse. I don't think much consequence happens there, but now they're in a field.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are now in this portion where a lot of the film feels like a montage, but it's very well executed. There's some direct montage-y scenes, but we're seeing a lot of instances clipped together, and it's over the course of a day. And here's what you need to also know. This film takes place over the course of a week. Mm-hmm. And unlike The Shining, where the days of the week flashing on the screen don't matter, it would have been really helpful if I had known this was Tuesday instead of like Wednesday or Thursday.
Yeah. Because
Saturday's coming, and I don't know when Saturday is. So have they been together half a day? Did they meet up the next day? I don't know.
The first time that Maude talks about it, actually talks to Harold, she says, my birthday's next week.
That's all we know.
Yeah. So it's like, so is that like the Friday or the Saturday before? Yeah.
What if it's Sunday?
Yeah.
And we have like an entire week. What if it's Saturday?
Yeah.
And we have an absolute entire week.
Mm-hmm.
What if it's Thursday afternoon?
Right.
I guess that wouldn't be next week.
I would think if you have already passed the beginning of that week, like let's say it's Wednesday and you're talking about next Saturday, like, oh yeah, I got that thing next week.
Right. So it's not like, okay, my brain is stupid bad with dates, which is why everything goes into my phone or I forget about it and I apologize to you via text later. Could you have as many as 14 days if you say next week? Because if it's Saturday this week, then I mean the next Saturday.
Mm-hmm. I would not think more than 14. I would think like less, definitely less than 14.
It feels like a week, a solid 7 days week.
Yeah. So like maybe they're on the, like, it's like fully a week, until her birthday. So this is like the Saturday before.
Yeah, if we did, I'm more brilliant. It's a cult film. Somebody's done a timeline.
Yeah.
We just didn't Google it hard enough.
Right.
But there, okay, so we've clipped from the greenhouse to them walking across by a body of water. And there's a shot of the reflection of them in the rippling water. Mm-hmm. And she says, you know, if I could come back as any, what she says in the greenhouse is that's the circle of life. It's kind of why she likes to go to funerals. Mm-hmm. As opposed to his morbid curiosity, she goes to funerals to celebrate the continuing circle of life. And mm-hmm. because she's, you know, older, she doesn't want to miss out on anything. She wants to see what it's like. Mm-hmm. And so she's like, in the greenhouse, she says, you know, things grow, live, change, die, become something else. And that's life. Mm-hmm. And so it clips to them by the water. And she goes, if I could come back as anything, I would come back as a sunflower. Yeah. Because they're tall and they're simple. Mm-hmm. And which made my brain go, because she's short and complicated.
She just wants to come back as the opposite, which is totally within her.
We all want to be the opposite. Mm-hmm. Hmm. I mean, don't you? A lot of times, don't we?
I guess in some ways it's nice to know what like a completely different person from who you are lives their life. That is definitely intriguing. But like, I mean, I would just want that experience along with having the experience that I have right now personally.
Yeah. You don't want to abandon your consciousness. I'm okay with that, Lydia. I like that about you, your consciousness and everything. Yeah. So then she turns to him and says, what would you want to be? What kind of flower would you want to be?
And he points to just another daisy in the field.
Just one of those.
Yeah, because they're all alike.
She's, oh no.
Yeah. And she says, if you look at all of them, they're actually pretty different. And I actually wrote down this quote.
Do it.
Yeah. She says, I feel that much of the world's sorrow comes from people who are this, and she holds up the daisy, yet allow themselves to be treated as that. And she points to everything. And like, my quote actually has an individual's, this is an individual and that is a monolith.
Yeah. One is this thing that you can look at and you see within this beautiful thing that it's got all these flaws and all of these beautiful things. And you can count these many petals, but not everyone has that many petals. This one grows to the left. This one grows to the right. This one's fat. I've never seen a fat daisy, but whatever. Mm-hmm. And like, she says, if you take it on an individual basic, more or less, mm-hmm. that thing can be unique and beautiful for you. And if you think of yourself as part of a them, then you lose yourself in the sea of daisies and you're really not any less special. It's just that you haven't, you know, had this intense relationship.
Right. It's also this idea of like treating yourself as being something, like being a part of a bigger whole. Hmm. And you kind of like are praising that whole more than you're praising the individual, which means on the other end, you could very easily be seeing other people in different groups as the other. Hmm. And if anybody knows anything about like movie criticism or like movie, I think that movie theory or something, there's this theory of the other. Mm-hmm. The theory of the other probably spans into other areas.
It's everywhere. Yeah. It's why we friggin' form tribes in the first place. Mm-hmm. Because in a group that's cohesive, we can defend ourselves. But the second we lose that herd, we become vulnerable. And I don't know if you feel like this, but this movie's all about being vulnerable mm-hmm. and still being strong.
Yeah. Yeah. Also has a lot to say in this day and age, just as much as it did back then, because apparently America really hasn't changed over 50 years.
Well, I think the bigger truth of it is people are people, and we tend to stop thinking, we categorize them, pack them away, mm-hmm. you know? And our millennials are the past hippies, and like...
Our boomers are the past hippies.
Boomers used to be hippies, right? Yeah. Millennials haven't evolved yet to whatever they're going to be. Oh. But I bet they're going to be just as awful, because it's not because I don't like millennials, it's just that people are awful.
Yeah.
They're also the best. If you take let's quote Men in Black, a person is fine. People are dumb, panicky animals. Do you have anything else on that?
No, I did want to move on to the tree.
Sorry. I only pause for 1 second because it brings home, it's a transition that Jen and I both really liked. Mm-hmm. Where they're in the field, they're sitting in the field of daisies, and she's explaining about them.
Oh yeah, right?
And then the scene fades to now they're in a graveyard. It appears to be a military graveyard. The stones are very uniform and spaced mm-hmm. very evenly.
Yeah,
and they're all starkly white, and they look like a field of daisies. Mm-hmm. So it's this literal field of daisies to this field of death, and this movie has a lot to do with mortality, and so the banality of the average death is like something that Harold fights against in his mind, and she is like coming to this death, and she is like, but it's not the death that defines me, it's this the beauty of existing. Mm-hmm. And or something like that. Something close to that. I'm sure there's a philosophy major somewhere who could say it better. But to have it visually, is it made me feel really artsy to be like, oh, white daisies, white tombstones. Yeah. It's really pretty. And then I thought, well, if you noticed it, it was really in your face and it doesn't really count for being an artistic notice. But then I was like, what would Maud say to me? She'd be like, that was a really good observation. I'm really glad you did that. Yeah. And I'd be like, can I have some of that tea? Like oat straw tea. I'll just be in the other room groping your statue.
Everybody gets to touch the wood vagina.
Yeah, but you have to wipe it down like the bike at the gym afterwards. Gross.
And that's when we come to them driving. And Maud does like these couple of like circles in an intersection, and she like stops, she parks.
They show her driving down the street for like not long, like mm-hmm. 15 seconds, 20 seconds. Yeah. They don't pick up hippie hitchhikers, which I think is probably meaningful mm-hmm. because they do a weird shot where the hippies are like, oh, pick us up, but they're driving like crazy people.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know. But all my notes say is Maud's driving, and then I just did squiggly marks that represent my anxiety.
I definitely had anxiety.
For her driving?
For her driving, yeah. Like, just watching.
Oh my God,
it.
You're going to die. Oh.
Sorry. Fun note, they're not driving around in Harold's hearse. They're driving around in a car.
It looks like the car from the Evil Dead. I told Jen. I wish I knew what that was. I don't remember.
Yeah.
But it's probably a Bronco or something.
It definitely isn't Harold's car because, like, and that becomes important later on because, like, she does a couple, she, like, is driving through the city and she spots a tree.
Yeah. And she does, like, she turns in an intersection, like, twice. Mm-hmm. She's like, cuts off a car, honk, 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 again, and then pulls up halfway onto the curb like a crazy person.
Yeah. And then she comes out and she's like, Harold, we have to save this tree and get it back to the forest.
Yes, she leaves the car door open and has him fall. She's like, oh, it's the smog. It's killing it. People can handle smog. A tree, it gives them asthma.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I don't know either.
I don't get it.
But let's steal a tree then.
Yeah, and he's like, you know, we can't really do this without tools. And she's like, you're right. The most sensible thing.
Well, at first he's like, we can't do that. This is public land. And she's like, exactly.
Yeah, like, and we're part of the public.
He can't fight it. He's like, well, then we'll need two tools. And she goes, we'll go to, well, nope.
Glaucushire.
Glaucushire. We were making up his name earlier.
Yeah. And in the background.
Imagine what this podcast would be like if we took notes.
Oh, I know. So they're having this conversation next to the tree, and they see in the background police are looking at the car.
It's three or four cops walking up to this car.
An unnecessary amount for a piss poor job, but maybe people like were pointing out, oh yeah, that was the car that
cut,
you know,
was being reckless.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so they see the police officer, and
Harold's like, cops. And she's like, oh, the police. And she takes off her handkerchief, starts folding it, and she just prances over. I have a theory of why she doesn't give zero craps about the police, by the way. And it has to do with her tattoo.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Yeah.
But she goes over and she's playing all nice with the officers and everything. And she's like, oh, how about that car over there? And points at another car.
Is that one parked correctly? And the officer's like, yeah, that's fine.
And so she goes ahead.
She walks over to the blue car now.
Yeah. She tells them, you should turn the radio off because it saves the battery.
Yes. And the cop sitting in the car is like, yeah, what a nice old lady telling me to turn the radio off.
And so she gets into the car.
I'm being a good cop right now. She's being a good old lady.
Harold knocks on the door and she opens it up and lets him come in.
She walks over to the driver's door, opens up and gets on. Harold walks to his door. And because I love these little stupid things, he tugs on the handle and it won't go. So he hits it. He's like, thunk, thunk. Unlock it.
Yeah.
And you see her reach across and unlock it.
Yeah. And like she waves to the police officer.
Officer waves right back.
And then she zooms off.
Yeah. She's like vroom, 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 around the first corner. And the cop who had been smiling in her direction goes,
oh.
Not auditorily. You just see his face fall. And he's like, I just bad copped right there. And not in the bad cop get an answer sort of way. But bad cop is, I'm failing at my job.
Later that night, they are
this is the hookah scene?
No, this isn't the hookah scene.
This is the champagne scene.
Oh yeah, where she,
after dinner, you want some champagne?
And he's like, oh, I don't drink. And she,
it's okay, it's organic.
And so she gets him some champagne and he brings up the umbrella.
Wait,
what?
Oh, we'll get to the umbrella. Okay. We'll get to that.
Okay,
but the end quote for that was, it's okay, it's organic, It has absolutely no nutritional value.
Oh, yeah. And that's when she had commented that consistency isn't a human trait.
It really isn't a human trait.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. I just knew you liked it, I don't want to leave.
No. That brings it back around. You know, we're doing the right thing. And then he asks about an umbrella that is up on the wall.
Yeah, it's got like steel. It's black. Mm-hmm. It's very severe looking. And so she starts to talk.
Yeah. She talks about fighting the big oppressive governments.
And kingdoms and kings.
And how she protested and, you know, fought things off, but she still kind of misses the kings, because when she was younger, she went to a Vienna party and she thought she was going to marry a soldier.
Yes. This is the part of the movie when Jen is talking to me a little bit on the side and is like, oh, she was born in the 1800s.
Mm, 1890 was what would have been the year that she was born.
1890, guys. 1890, guys.
I mean, that's if you're taking it from the year of 1970, which, you know, just kind of makes things easier for
me. Yeah, it makes the most sense. They're wearing a lot of bell bottoms for us to be arguing that point.
Right. She would have seen World War One and World War Two. Yes. She would have been like 50 when World War... would she have been 50?
Well, she's reminiscing, and she's like, Frederick was so serious. And she starts talking about, he was a professor at the university and the hospital or something like that.
The government, yeah.
Oh, the government and mm-hmm. the university. And she doesn't rant too long. It's not a very long scene, but you see her mist up mm-hmm. and turn away. And he's like, so do you use that umbrella anymore? And she doesn't hear him. She's so wrapped up in the mm-hmm. moment. And he goes, do you still, what's the word he uses? Do you still rebel or something like that?
Yeah.
Are you still fighting?
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, she turns back and her eyes are wet and she just looks so beautiful and sad. She's like, oh yeah, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
They're just in little ways.
Yeah.
She says, I don't need a weapon anymore mm-hmm. because I just embrace.
Yeah.
And I'm like, ah! I can't do the Audrey noise, guys, but I was like, ah!
Yeah. And this is bringing her down. So she's like, I want to feel happy again. And she goes,
shall we have a song?
Yeah.
She just switches gears. She has to.
Yeah. And so she goes over. She asks Harold, do you play? And he's like, no, I don't play. Or like she goes over to the piano. That's yes. what it is. She goes over to the piano and she starts playing this song.
She starts out with the song, the part of the song you all know already, which is, yeah. If you want to be me. And if you want to be you.
Yeah.
Because there's a million things. You guys are not helping. You know that there
do,
are.
Do, 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 do,
and if
do,
you want to sing out, sing out.
And if you want to be free, be free. Because there's a million ways to be.
You know that there are.
And she's like, Harold, sing it. And he's just like,
she's like, do, 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 do. And then one of the things I really like is when she stands up and steps away from the piano and you realize it's a player piano the whole time. And she just dances as it's like,
yeah.
And like, he is just standing there looking at her. And my notes are like, my notes about her right now are, yes, anding life like a badass.
Mm-hmm. She is the improvisation partner to life.
Yes.
Did he say that
right? That was perfect. No, it was, you know what? Maude would have loved it.
Yeah, she would have. And she asked Harold if he's going to go ahead and play an instrument.
I don't know how to play any instrument.
No, everybody should learn how to play an instrument.
Music is the dance of the universe or
cosmic
something.
Dance.
Oh, God, the cosmic dance. All right. Every once in a while, I mean, like, I am like way yes, Andy, mm-hmm. and I'm like way crunchy a lot of the times. But every once in a while, when somebody says something like that, my inner Ron Swanson comes out and I'm just like, I'm going to call bull on that. And then I just comb my mustache for like 45 minutes.
I always figured she was meeting, you know, the language of the universe.
I guess so.
Does that sound better? Is that a little bit more palatable?
No, because she said cosmic dance.
Okay.
So she goes to her closet and it's just full of instruments. There's a guitar in there, which he pulls out she hands him for a second to play with. And she's like, no, 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 no. And this is where my brain subtext is like, you're a guy in the 70s. You know what you should be playing?
The banjo.
And he just holds this banjo. He's like, huh, I guess this is me now.
She's like, and then you put your fingers right here.
You got to hold a fret.
This is the only lesson you will ever need in order to play the banjo.
It's the only official instruction he gets at all.
And like, there's this moment where he goes to strum it and then it cuts to him playing in like the garden back home.
Mm-hmm. And his mom is calling for him and walking around. She's like, Harold, Harold. Harold.
He's the only guy playing in the entire area.
And he's also super visible over the low hedge she's sitting in front of, which she walks up to. She's a full head and a half taller than this hedge. Mm-hmm. She just needed to look up. Mm-hmm. She's like, Harold, come with me. I have something for you. And he looks and he's looking at her and she's like, she kind of puts her hands up. She's like, it's a present. And he like, you just, they cut to them walking.
Yeah. And there's a little bit.
Oh, but he's holding the banjo. He's holding the banjo the entire time.
Yeah. And they're walking across like this courtyard-esque area.
Mm-hmm.
And she she opens up the door and the camera pans from away from the door frame until you see this like silver Jaguar with a ribbon on it. And
what a giant ribbon.
And she says that she was like, I had them take away that clunker of yours for this new thing. And this is a more proper car for a child of your age. And I think it's just super good. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. So she ends up walking away and you see his face where he's holding the banjo and he's like, WTF, mom. Mm-hmm. Right. But then we cut to a blowtorch, and I'm like, yeah, back in it. I'm no longer mad about the cosmic dance. Because you give me open flame and destruction of expensive property. Yes.
And Harold, like, brings it over to the car, has not even taken off the ribbon yet. And he puts this, like, welder's mask down.
The sexiest welder's mask I've ever seen.
Doesn't change his clothes, by the way.
Just unbuttons a little bit because he's so hardcore. Oh, my God. I mean, for an 18-year-old, I'm like, all right.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, guys, for specificity. An 18-year-old in a movie from 50 years ago.
And then we see them drive, and then we see this car driving down the road with a tree in the back of it. The tree returns!
The tree returns!
Yeah, and Harold and Maude are liberating it.
Okay, so this is stolen tree, toll booth, picket fences. I don't know why I wrote picket fences.
Well, because she's like going, like the picket fences are the like picket lines. Like people who would are protesting.
Oh, is that what that is?
I mean,
I don't know why I wrote it down now.
Okay.
Can't remember picket fence at all.
That's okay. But so they run through a toll booth.
Yeah. And then a cop is immediately behind them.
This is Tom Selleck. I mean, he's got some fame. He was in the second Parent Trap movie.
Ooh.
He was in Contact.
He was in Picket Fences. God.
That's why you wrote Picket Fences.
I don't know my life.
So they run through the toll booth. Picket Fences cop comes up and drives up in his motorcycle,
pulls him over.
Yeah,
they have a brief exchange. He's like, so this isn't your car, you don't have a driver's license. She's word playing him all over the place.
Yeah.
And then he's
like, let me get this straight. And she's like, oh, okay. Great. And she just drives off.
And it took me a while to get the joke, but it's because she was giving him time to get it straight.
Yeah.
So they're in the forest. She's like, don't you love the feeling of soil in your hands? This is great. We're in nature. I'm sorry. I don't know if you can elaborate more on this scene, but I was like, yeah, of course they plant the tree and she has to say something dippy.
My body's in the earth and my head is in the stars.
The earth is my body. My head is in the stars. Who said that?
I don't know.
Then I guess it was me. Maude. This is where she loses. Okay, it was the comic dance. Yeah. Comic dance. Comic dance is awesome. Cosmic dance. I was like, oh no.
Every time I dance, it's comic.
No, true. Hand of God. Yeah. I feel you.
And so they end up, you know, they plant the tree, got that taken care of, and then they're driving back. The cop sees them, literally like moves away from the other person that he was given a ticket to.
Drops their stuff on the ground and is like, oh, wait, I gotta get my driving gloves. And he goes to put on his gloves, pulls them over a second time.
Yeah. And he's just like, do you know how many like offenses or something?
Mm-hmm.
It was like stolen car or resisting arrest. And then he pulls out the shovel and he's like, is this even your shovel?
Well, I think this is, okay, so, but before this second pulling over scene is the scene where they fake him out with the donut.
Yeah, yeah, they run, like, circle.
They do donuts around the cop, Lydia. That's visual pun humor.
Oh,
donuts around the cop. And then my brain, which was wrecked when I saw it, was like, in Soviet Russia, donuts police. But, like, that doesn't make any sense.
In Soviet Russia, donuts pull over police.
Whatever. They do donuts. His motorcycle stalls. And then it's not until he catches up with them again that he pulls them over, pulls them both out of the car.
Yeah.
And has his list of offenses he starts reading out to them. And she's like, do you know how long this is going to be? He's like, you need to get out of the car too, dude.
He asks both of them to get out of the car and he gets into the car to do his cop stuff. Like, get information.
Like, makes no sense.
Yeah.
And then she has two suspects like standing by behind him.
Yeah. And so they go and they steal his motorcycle, but she makes sure Harold grabs the shovel.
We wouldn't do that to Gloucestershire sauce. Right. Gloucester.
It works because I don't remember Gloucester. How to pronounce.
Anyways, but one of a movie gaffe is when Harold grabs the shovel and he runs towards Maude on the motorcycle. He hits himself in the head, and you can see it. And it's not. I don't know how hard it was, but you can see him go oof. And then she's like, show must go on. He jumps on the back of the motorcycle and they peel out. And now the cop's like, oh, my God.
So he pulls out his gun.
He stands up, pulls out his gun, holds it over his arm all super awesome like.
Yeah.
And then
he clicks it. The universe does not like this cop because not only does his motorcycle stall when they do donuts mm-hmm. over him, mm-hmm. his gun does not fire a bullet.
But Lydia, maybe the universe is fair in that. He did not commit an act of violence against a non-violent offender.
Right.
Like,
that's what the universe is saying. You know, this is pretty much a non-violent crime. Mm-hmm. So maybe not, you know, promote violence against it.
Lethal force when they have physically hurt no one mm-hmm. and have no intention to physically hurt anyone.
Right.
That cop was lucky his gun didn't go off.
But like she very clearly says, oh, we're taking this tree to go and plant it back in the forest. Uh-huh. And then they come back and he's like, where's the tree? She's like, oh, we put it in the forest. They did what they said.
Yeah. I mean, but doing what you say doesn't make it less illegal.
Oh, yeah, I know. Because, like,
I've prominently announced lots of stuff that I was going to do.
Yeah.
Super not okay.
I will say it was at this point where I was like, I'm very grateful that Maude did not leave Harold holding with the police charges. Though he's rich enough, they could probably make that go away.
He would have gotten away with it, yeah.
And now they're back at Maude's.
Now and this is the hookah scene.
Yeah. And they're smoking from a hookah. And Harold's like, oh, I'm picking up a lot of bad habits with you.
Oh, picking up on vices. She's like, vices, virtue, vices. Don't be so focused on morality. Be above morality. You'll mm-hmm. find that you live life a lot more fully if you do.
Yeah.
I kind of dig that a bit. Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the exact words, but Harold ends up going into the first time he died.
Yes. He goes. Oh, it's after she says that. He goes, I haven't lived then. Mm-hmm. I've died a few times.
Oh, yeah.
I just will say that they're smoking out of a hookah with no smoke coming out of it, which hurts. Mm-hmm. But they're both wearing kimonos. She has beautiful white flowers in her hair. There's sake cups on the ground. Mm-hmm. It's like a whole thing right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're like, oh, I love this. Visually, I love this scene. He's sitting with his back against the wall. He starts to describe the first time he killed himself.
Yeah, there was a chemistry explosion at mm-hmm. a school. He knew that he wouldn't be able to go back. And so he just left and went home where his mom had a party. And he just snuck in through the back stairs mm-hmm. and was going to go to bed. And when he got the feeling like he needed to...
The police showed up at the front door.
Yeah.
And they said, your son is dead. He exploded himself.
Yeah.
And she like... puts her arm up dramatically, he says, and like she emitted these noises.
She reaches one hand out like grasping for someone to grab her, and then she just like sighs and faints.
Yeah, and he said,
I decided then, he starts laughing and he like puts his head down and then it like turns into tears. And like such a good actor.
Oh my God. I hate crying scenes mm-hmm. when they seem forced.
Yeah.
And I was so in it with this kid that when he lifted his head and he said, and right then,
I decided then that I enjoyed being dead. Yeah. And Maude, you know, goes ahead and gives him some inspirational line about how most people are sorry.
I know, it just fits into the few. Yeah. There's a handful of lines that Maude says that just strike me as wrong because she's like being too inspirational.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is not one of them, in my opinion.
No, you like this?
Well, I mean, it's...
I like the last line of it.
Oh, yeah.
It's just everything up to it I could put in the trash bin. You have to go out and live life. Yeah. L. Give me an L. Go play the big game.
Or else
give me an L. Give me an I. Give me a V. Give me an E. Yeah. Live. Otherwise, you won't have anything to talk about in the locker room.
Yeah.
Okay. The last one is great.
Yeah.
It's just had to put up with all the rest of it. And I don't like sports metaphors, apparently.
And then we meet the second girl that Harold's getting introduced to.
They're waltzing after that.
Oh, they're waltzing. Sorry.
To another famous waltzing song that I don't know what it is.
Never mind.
Okay. So second girl has been preluded by mom. Oh, sorry, Miss Chasen, as being a very quiet girl who mm-hmm. sells chicken feet.
Yeah. And this girl's name is Edith. And she goes ahead and is led over to the garage type area.
He's very handy.
Yes, he's been working on his Jaguar. And he is actually, what Harold is doing, is turning his Jaguar into like a mini hearse.
It's glorious.
Yes.
There was only one ever made and then they destroyed it. You watched it get destroyed. I know. It's the worst.
Yeah.
It's the worst. But knowing that makes this something that you have to enjoy it more while we have it.
Yeah.
It looks like a hearse.
I mean, it's really compact. And then they walk like, and then...
My notes refer to this mini Jaguar hearse as pure sex.
It's like the Batmobile.
It really is. Yeah. It's all like, it's got all that chonk in the back. It's all sleek in the front.
Yeah.
I mean.
And his mom says, Harold, please get cleaned up and meet us in the sitting room. And then they walk away and he flips her off.
He does. He's like, with his finger. It's so good.
Yeah. And so he does. He gets cleaned up and he meets them. And he then, you know, as they're talking in the sitting room about like, oh, it's not the entire Southwest, but, you know, we were dealing with barley last week and that was a really hot cellar. And then he goes and like
he cuts off his own hand. Yeah, he sets his hand on the table and she's just like, yeah, all this paperwork, la, 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 la. And then he pulls out a cleaver and just chops through his wrist. Mm-hmm. And it's the least realistic looking scene where he harms himself because there's no blood or anything.
No blood.
But she's just, what does she do?
She just is... Oh,
that's it.
I think that's it's she doesn't like.
No, it cuts to her beetle because she had like a yellow beetle peeling out of the parking
lot. That's right. Yes. That's right. And that's when his mom is just like, okay, that's it, Harold. We're going to make sure that you go into the military.
I call this active duty leather cowboy hat.
Yeah. And then you see Harold talking to Maude outside of her place about like, oh, I'm going to get drafted. She's just like, just, you know, don't go. And he's like, well, then I'll go to jail. And she's like, you'll be in good company.
So then between my experience and your ability, we should be able to figure something out.
Oh, and they figure something out.
So they cut to the car with him driving. He's like, there's a chauffeur and the general, the uncle, whatever's face is like, he's talking about the war with the Jerrys, the two best wars we ever had with the Jerrys. We need to get back to a good war. We can all us Americans can get behind.
Yeah. There's this long scene where his uncle is talking about how great war is and it put money in his bank. And, you know, there are some losses. Like any job, and he looks to his right arm, but like they're walking.
Oh, hold on. He also says that there's this country has an outright condemnation of war.
Yeah. And they're walking through what looks like old military, like an old military fort.
Yes, it does. It's right on the water. It's very tall and there's craggy rocks all around, the sound of the sea. It's a place I would love to explore.
Yeah. And so his uncle is talking about like all these great things about war. And he's talking about like this experience where he like.
He starts to do how, I mean, here's the thing. I've only known a few amputees, but I want to know that story. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing about, I assume, and please correct me if you want. At any of our social medias, one of the things about being an amputee is on occasion you're gonna have to tell that story, and there's a certain fraction of those amputees who like telling their story a lot.
Yeah.
And so he's like, there we are behind them and we're in front of enemy lines and we're like da 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 da, and my brain was like, I can only kill.
Yeah. And Harold's just like getting all excited about it,
smiling. It's the creepiest freaking thing.
And then he's like, oh, they're really, I never realized it could be so exciting. Are they gonna teach me how to kill a man with, you know, and he's
gonna teach me how to shoot a gun.
Yeah.
Is he gonna teach me how to use a bayonet?
Is he gonna teach me how to kill someone with my bare hands?
Is he gonna teach me how to slit somebody's throat?
And then he's like,
I think you're getting kind of out of hand. Do you think it'll teach me how to make one of these?
And he's talking about like trophies, like scalps and
genitals. he says privates, but he talks about cutting off somebody's junk.
And when he says, are they going to teach me how to make one of these, and he pulls out this head,
a shrunken head.
And he's waving it around and he's going around and his uncle's like, I think you're getting carried away, Harold.
But Harold starts to walk around the corner and then the uncle follows, and then
you see Maude in this black getup holding this sign that just says peace. And she's like, I'm protesting war.
It is the most surreal scene in the entire film because it feels like something ripped out of Godspell.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like a one-off morality play.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to admit. She's like, I'm against war. And he's like, I'm all about war now.
It reminds me of Monty Python.
Oh.
A bit.
Oh, yeah.
Especially the Holy Grail scene where they've got the farmers who are just farming mud and just picking up mud and throwing it around.
Help, I'm being oppressed. I'll be oppressed.
This isn't a monarchy. We're in a...
We're in a narco syndicate. Something like that. I don't know. But she takes the head from Harold.
And like uncle is like, I have no idea what's going on. My war-crazed nephew is trying to beat up a hippie.
An old hippie lady.
Who happens to be holding a certain umbrella.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Yeah. And he, and Harold, when the head gets taken from him, he freaks out. And he's just like, she took my head. She took my head. I'm going to kill her.
She books it, right? Yeah. And he grabs up her sign and runs after her. And the uncle is like, I don't even know what I'm going to do. Yeah. So he has to run after her. He's like running down these steps. He's got one arm. It's pretty good. He's like trying to make it down these dilapidated steps, just flippity flopping his arm.
Yeah.
Why he still has a sleeve? I don't get it. You trim.
Well, because he got a salute with his missing arm.
Oh, I got to think about that. Okay, yeah. So they get down to the bottom of these steps, and now they're up against the seawall, and like Harold is pretending to bash Maud with a sign that says peace. And she's beating him with like the protest umbrella, and the uncle tries to get in between them,
and she throws that shrunken head
right off the side,
which you had to ask how much you wanted, but that's hers.
Yeah, I don't think Harold had one. I'm just saying, I bet it was hers.
Yeah, it seems like something she would have on hand.
It's more of a incidental than integral.
Right. And so there's this struggle, and you see from the camera is up above them. So you see this like black hole, this black thing.
Yeah, it's a drainage hole or something like that. And but it doesn't have a grate over it.
Right. And so she is, she's like struggling.
Uncle's like, stop this, stop this.
Yeah, and he's struggling with Harold, and she's like trying to hit him. And then you see like the camera where the camera is framed with Harold and Victor, and Maude is in the middle.
They close up her face.
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah. She does that. It's awesome.
Yeah. At one point, she like drops down.
All you see is like this kind of like the, you know how in Star Wars when you kill a Jedi and their cloak drops to the ground?
Yeah.
You just see this cloak drop to the ground, except it's her falling through the hole. Yeah. And then all of a sudden it's just the two of them, and they're not fighting anymore because it's just uncle and nephew. And
yeah.
They're,
and his uncle just is like, Harold, what did you do?
He looked, has a picture of the uncle looking down into the hole of water that's now still, and you don't know where Maude is anymore. Mm-hmm. But in the fight, his string got pulled, so now his fake arm is up and he's giving a salute to himself from the bottom of a sewer hole. Visually, it's fantastic.
We're now 2/3 of the way through Maude Madness, a plotter, but there's still so much more to review of this 70s romantic black comedy. We hope your heart is open to a few more moments of dysfunctional dramedy as we set to conclude our wondrous walkthrough, laugh through the hard times, and settle in for our final shock and applaudable moments. Hey, this is your audio engineer and too-dangerous-to-go-alone draft dodger, Jen, congratulating you on every moment you've wanted to interrupt us, even though you know we're not there with you. Did you know that those suspiciously uncouth comments are worth gold in the land of commercial-free podcasting? When you tag us using @shockedandapplaud on Facebook or @shockedapplaud on Twitter, it not only gives us warm tingles on the inside, but also helps us reach our monthly audience goals. Why not drop us a comment on your favorite part of the episode? We know you're just dying to find out how long this relationship can last. We'll be back in only 1 week for the eventually fulfilling conclusion of our review of Harold and Maude. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.